According to our next guest, the America we live in today was born not on July 4th, 1776, but instead on December 7th, 1941, when an armada of 354 Japanese warplanes, supported by aircraft carriers, destroyers, and submarines, suddenly and savagely attacked the United States, killing 2,403 men, and forced America's entry into World War II. Pearl Harbor, From Infamy to Greatness, the new book, follows moment by moment the sailors, soldiers, pilots, diplomats, admirals, generals, emperor, and president as they engineer, fight, and react to this stunningly dramatic moment in world history. Craig Nelson is the author of the new book. He's also the author of the New York Times bestseller, Rocket Men. Again, the name of this new book is Pearl Harbor, From Infamy to Greatness. And we welcome Craig Nelson to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us. Pleasure to have you.
Thank you for having me. Great to be here.
What brought you to this project and ultimately what you wanted to look at when it came to Pearl Harbor?
Well, two things at once happened. An editor came up with the idea because he knew that I like to do great moments in American history. And I was thinking about it. And then during 9/11, I watched the second plane hit the tower from about a mile away. And I developed an irrational fear about planes flying overhead. And I'd see one and go, why is that there? Where is it going? What is it doing? And when I tried to look into how to cure myself of this fear, I found that it was a very common affliction of survivors of Pearl Harbor. So suddenly I was sort of brought into this story, and I put together a team of researchers because I was on a deadline for this 75th anniversary that we're going to celebrate this year. And we immediately came up with just one tremendous thing after another, because the last big serious book about Pearl Harbor was researched 50 years ago. And it's just amazing what difference that amount of time can make.
Much of the book has to do with, and it's a fascinating aspect of the book, is the buildup and the months leading up to the attacks. Give us a sense of what we were doing diplomatically, meaning what were we as Americans doing diplomatically that helped lead to December 7th?
Well, you know, to this day, the big thing that people, even casual people interested in Pearl Harbor, the first thing they want to know is, how did this happen? So I decided to document, using cables and diaries and the memories of people who were there, exactly step by step how it happened. And in fact, though it's hard to believe it now after 70 years of good friendship, the United States and Japan had a very rocky relationship, starting with Commodore Perry showing up in gunboats and demanding commercial access to Tokyo. And from then on, there was sort of this seesawing back and forth where at times our relations were good and at times they were bad. And in fact, during the period leading up to Pearl Harbor, they weren't that bad, but there was a thorn in the side, and that was the fact that Japan had enmeshed itself in China. And China was like Vietnam for Japan. It was this quagmire that they couldn't really win and they couldn't really get out of. And the Chinese were very good friends with the United States at that time. So we were trying to defend them and force Japan out. And that was really the sticking point between the two countries. And one thing that I found in my research was the fact that, you know, historically we were taught that the Japanese were just like the Nazis. They were this unstoppable, warmongering force. But really, what we learned was that there were a huge amount of squabbling going on between the army and the civilian government and between the army and the navy. And if FDR and his Secretary of State, Cardinal Hull, had been a little less belligerent in how they were negotiating with the Japanese, we might never have had a Pearl Harbor.
Talk, as you do in the book, about the overestimation of the U.S.'s military strength in Hawaii. There was a memo to Roosevelt that contradicted previous assurances that the base was safe. You go
well,
to...
Yeah, this, Yeah, this is really the fundamental new thing, I think, that we discovered, besides a whole new picture of what was going on in Japan in the 1930s leading up to this war. The big revelation for me was that the chiefs of the military in America were constantly telling Roosevelt and Hull that Hawaii was impregnable, it was the Gibraltar of the Pacific, it was the second biggest military base overseas that we had besides the Panama Canal. We had 35,000 troops stationed there. And again, they said, no one could possibly want to attack there. The Japanese wouldn't think of invading us. They're nothing compared to the United States. They don't have our technology and our fantastic abilities in war, and they wouldn't even think of doing that. And this is what made Hull and Roosevelt belligerent in their negotiations with the Japanese. And then on November 5th, they get a memo saying, oh, actually, you know what? Things are really pretty rocky out there, and the Japanese are a lot more powerful than we thought, so you need to play for time. You know, don't do anything that might piss them off on November 5th, 1941, a little over a month before Pearl Harbor.
Please tell us the story about the deadly double ad.
Oh, this is a fantastic story. There is an amazing little piece of advertising that appeared in the in November. And this is what, there are a couple of mysteries about Pearl Harbor that still exist to this day. And this was an ad to play a game called The Deadly Double. And it has a pair of dice. The ad was illustrated with a pair of dice saying 12 and 7, which is on no dice we've ever heard of. And it looked like, it told you that you should be playing this game. You make sure this game to have this game on hand in case you found yourself in an air raid shelter. The military intelligence found this ad very disturbing, and they tried to investigate it. But the company that supposedly made the game and the game itself never existed, and the guy who placed the ad paid in person with cash, and he couldn't be tracked down. So I guess it's just going to be a mystery that remains to this day.
But it is a little spooky.
It's very spooky. Another very disturbing story about Pearl Harbor is that when the Japanese armada sailed across the whole of the northern Pacific from Japan to Hawaii, they were not detected by a single other vessel except one, a Russian tanker called the Uritsky. And the normal procedure was for them to take down the Uritsky, but they let it pass. And we don't know why they did that. And we don't know if the Uritsky told his Russian commanders they'd seen this Japanese armada. And if so, what did Stalin do with that information? That's the end of that story. So there are a couple of mysteries 75 years later about Pearl Harbor.
When you took on this project, as you said, much of the research had been done 50 years ago. So what new research were you able to obtain and new research that was very helpful in fleshing out the story?
Well, what happened is that right now, 75 years means we're on the sort of border between journalism and history. Meaning there are still some people you can interview, but almost all of the people who were there at the time are dying out. And so at this point, what we did instead was we sort of ransacked the oral history archives that have been set up, and we went through, we redid all of the research of the federal investigations, which are 48, think of a filing cabinet 48 feet long. That's how big those investigations are. And then we went through the Japanese side of the story, which is 105 volumes is their history of World War II. And most of this was either not available because the Japanese hadn't published it, or we didn't have translators, or we couldn't get our hands on it on that side of things. And a lot of it on the American side wasn't available because people were so traumatized at Pearl Harbor that they couldn't really talk about it for many, many years. And this is why when you read a lot of the previous books, the attack itself is very sanitized. You don't really get a sense of how horrifying and gruesome and terrible it really was, because in World War II, we didn't know anything about PTSD, and no one was being helped. And I really think the entire Greatest Generation suffered from PTSD and got no help for it. You were told you were a coward if you said anything about it. You were told to just get on with your life. And it comes up again and again. People were so traumatized. realize they couldn't talk about it for decades and decades, but now they can talk about it, and that's how we got all of that incredible material in the book.
Give us a sense of what happened on that day, because it's such a sliver of time, and yet so much happened and the world changed.
Well, basically, the entire attack took an hour and a half. It came in two waves. They deliberately flew in from opposing directions, so they looked like they were coming in from all sides, and it couldn't be determined where they'd come from, so the American Air Forces couldn't fly back and find the, it was called the Kido Butai, the armada that had come to attack us. And a lot of it was very shocking because the officers, even though they'd received 56 pages of warnings from Washington that something was about to happen, they really did nothing to prepare for it at all. So the officers were all asleep in their houses and apartments, and the only people on the boats were the little tiny kids. The average age was 19. So you're no 19-year-old. Can you imagine this happening to 19-year-old little kids who, you know, were depressed to be in Hawaii because they were so far from home, and that's how young they were. So a number of terrible, terrible things happened in this attack because they were just sitting ducks. They couldn't fire up their boilers and move. They couldn't, because they didn't have boilers fired up, many of them couldn't even mount defense guns. They were really sitting ducks. And in two cases, the picture on the book's cover is of the Shah, but the exact same thing you see on that cover is what happened to Arizona, where purely by luck for the Japanese, their bombs penetrated the armor of an American battleship and crashed into the hold where the battleship was keeping its own bombs and ammunition. So it turned the battleship itself into its own bomb. And when Arizona exploded, over 1,000 men died in just that moment.
When you consider the consequences that you say that were unforeseen and resonant, they linger today. Talk a little bit about the consequences.
Well, I call my book From Infamy to Greatness because the course of what happens in this history is sort of remarkable, and it's a whole series of amazing what-ifs. If we had been able to negotiate with Japan and not have Pearl Harbor, we would have entered World War II. We would have fought the Nazis because they were taking down our shipping in the Atlantic, and they were a growing menace. So that would have happened, but we wouldn't have fought a world war on two oceans and three continents at once. We wouldn't have ended being the premier global superpower. We wouldn't have looked at the carnage and devastation of that and said, we're going to do everything we can to make sure this never happens again. We wouldn't have had our Secretary of War and our Secretary of State winning Nobel Peace Prizes for starting the United Nations and beginning the Marshall Plan of rebuilding our enemies, Germany and Japan, and turning them into two of our strongest allies. And we wouldn't have 70 decades of no World War III, of a peace that really America created. So that's where that subtitle comes from, and that really is just an amazing story to me. And I wish I'd had enough time to spend more time on that side of the story, because I think it's amazing.
The name of the book is Pearl Harbor, From Infamy to Greatness. Craig Nelson, a great pleasure to have you on the program. Thank you very much for sharing with us.
Thank you, sir.
Again, the name of the book is Pearl Harbor, From Infamy to Greatness. It is published by Scribner. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.